I'd like to look this evening with the help of the Lord a little more at the Sermon on the Mount. And this morning I made the comment that one of the most important words in one of the scriptures we read in our Sunday school was the word teach. And anytime you're teaching something, it bears a lot of repetition. And so I'm just trying to make sure that we get a hold of things here that don't escape us, and we can be fully persuaded. I don't want us to be maybe kind of, sort of. I want us to be fully persuaded. So the Sermon on the Mount, from best of my understanding in the scripture, seems to be a chronologically sequenced chapter, beginning in the fifth chapter of Matthew, right after the fourth chapter. The multitudes that were there that caused Jesus to go up on the hillside, or the mountain, as it says here in verse 1 of chapter 5, were those that had begun to follow him, most likely because they had been impacted by John's ministry, and now Jesus come along and was preaching the kingdom of heaven. Remember, John had preached the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and now Jesus come along and was preaching the kingdom of heaven, and repent. And so we have here in the fifth chapter of Matthew's an account of what the character of a Christian should be, and the Beatitudes, as we talked about. And we read down through where it talks about us being a salt, being the salt of the earth, and a light, something that's set on a hill that would draw others to it. And not that we should allow our light to become dimmer as the darkness gets darker, but that our light would become brighter as far as the relevance of the darkness around us. And we spent some time, I believe, last Sunday talking about the 17th through the 20th verse of how that Jesus says here in verse 17, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill." And I know from various perspectives we can get the idea that the law was harsh, that it was legalistic, it was hard to satisfy. It was hard to satisfy because people's hearts weren't changed. It was like taking something that really wasn't designed to do the job and forcing it into service. I have an electric pipe threading tool that I bought. I bought three of them now, and I didn't buy any of them to thread pipe. I bought this pipe threading tool because of the power and the gear ratio of the thing, and I took the apparatus that would normally thread the pipe, where the threading apparatus is, and I attached an extension, a half-inch drive extension, so I can put a socket on it, and it's my cab bolt remover tool. So if you got these bolts, then some of these cabs that have Loctite on them, and if you use an impact on it, it'll break the nut loose in the body. And this tool works pretty good. If you're brace yourself, it's pretty powerful, and it'll just about wind you up in your extension cord. But if you brace yourself just right and pull the trigger, it'll crank that bolt out, and it works, okay? But it's not designed to do what I'm doing with it. And you know, humanity in a depraved state is not really equipped to live pleasing to God. But the law came along in the Old Testament, And its purpose was to make mankind conform enough to what law God wanted, that God could bless them and he could interact with them on a, you know what it means, the difference of being civil to someone and being friends? You know what that is? To be civil is someone that's got enough fortitude to say good morning and hello and acknowledge another person's presence. And to be friends is someone that you want to go run and give them a big hug. And the law came along to kind of make mankind civil with God, to where he could stand to see them in his coming into his presence and all. But Jesus came, he says, I didn't come to destroy the law, but I came to fulfill it. So we talked also about how that that there was no jot or tittle that would pass from the law. The jot was is referring to, I believe, the smallest letter physically in the Hebrew alphabet, called a yod. It's just a real small kind of a backward apostrophe, or almost looks like a piece of angle iron, you know, just a cross section, just a little mark. I'll put it back up here on the board maybe. Just like this. And then there was two letters that we talked about. One kind of takes the same place in the, called a dalet and a resh, I believe. And the one of them, the resh, looks like kind of a bigger version of this, kind of like a backward seven. And the, that's a normal seven, isn't it? All right, sorry about that. I'm backwards because I turned around here. But the dalet is kind of like this. So it don't take much imagination to see how someone with a little sloppy handwriting could change one letter to the other one. And if you change a D to an R, we talked about how that could change the meaning of something. And could change. So he said one jot or one tittle. And the ancient Hebrew alphabet, and I don't know where they're at now, what if they write Hebrew, anybody does, but they didn't use any vowels. There was no vowels in the alphabet per se, but the vowels were just kind of like little accent marks. You know how sometimes we have an E and then we have a little accent mark up on top, or we have another one that has a little half-stop looking thing on it in our alphabet to give a different inflection or a different sound. Well, that's kind of how their vowels were for their words, is there was little kind of accent marks. And he says the whole thing, none of that's going to disappear. It's all going to be just like it was. But he said, I came to fulfill the law. So I'd like to begin in verse 21 and kind of look. Jesus took one of the commandments and he gave us some, maybe some new perspective on it a little bit. Maybe it's not a new perspective for us, but I believe it was for some of those that was there listening to him that day when he gave the Sermon on the Mount. He said in verse 21 of chapter 5 of Matthew, "Ye have heard that it was said of them of old time, thou shalt not kill." That's in the Ten Commandments, isn't it? "And whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Reka," that means empty or worthless, that's what that word means, shall be in danger of the council, but whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and thou rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First, be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. Agree with thine adversary quickly, whilst thou art in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison. Verily I say unto thee, thou shalt by no means come out thence till thou hast paid the othermost farthing. So he taught some things that were instigators or behind the scenes. You know, today, if there's a life that's taken by another person, they try to determine if it's premeditated or if it's accidental or if it's second degree or if it's not a murder charge, it's a manslaughter charge, or there's all kinds of variations there. And all of it depends on what they feel like they can determine about the events that led up to it. And Jesus here begins to, he says to those that's listening, he says, I didn't come to destroy the law. I didn't come to say that none of that matters anymore. He said, I came to fulfill it. So, what does it mean? To me, it means that he came to equip us with a change of heart to where we could be restored to have the level of compassion for our fellow man like God had intended for us to have in the beginning. And to not be looking for an opportunity and not harboring the thoughts that would cause us to take another person's life. So, he instituted something here. He set the stage for them to understand the old law in a new light, in a new level of comprehension, not just a level of don't do something. As a parent, there are times that you're going to tell your children, especially when they're small and maybe they lack understanding, you're going to tell them to do a specific task. And somewhere along the time, a long time before they become an adolescent, they're going to start asking you why. And a lot of times they say that's around 2 years old, but might last a little longer than that, so just be aware of that. And they're going to say why. And you as a parent at some point are going to say, I'm not telling you why, you just do it. I don't have to give you the reasons behind what I'm telling you. You just go do the task that I told you to do. May be pretty simple, it may be pretty strenuous, but the parent has the right to compel the child to do whatever the task is. May be household chores, it may be something about their behavior, whatever it might be, this is something you got to do. Somewhere along the line, we will do well as a parent to get them on board of why we would tell them that. Why would we tell them to go tell your brother you're sorry? Why would I tell my child you have to go pick up the toys that you're playing with? You have to put them back where you got them. You have to close the door. All of those things that we might tell them, you have to do it. I'm not telling you why. I'm not explaining it. I'm not here to debate anything with you. You just do it because I said so. And that's kind of the way the law was. The law said, thou shalt not kill. Did they know that they shouldn't before that? Surely they had some level of remorse or some level of realization that this is not the best thing to take another person's life, but they didn't know what to do with their anger. They didn't know what to do with their disappointment. They didn't know how to discharge their emotions and other things. So things became heated. Cain and Abel. Conflict there. We've talked about that here a while back. But ended up with Abel life being taken. And then Cain didn't even want to take responsibility for it. He said, it's not even my job to look after him. That's yours, God. You know, Jesus said, I came not to destroy the law, not to allow some little point, whether it's a jot or a tittle or whether it's the accent mark or whatever it is. I didn't come to allow anything. The consequences is that if you take a person's life, it's serious. And he says, not only that, but when you start allowing yourself to harbor anger, there's consequences for that. And he began to teach them, you don't just take a life arbitrarily. He says, if you're angry, there's a cause. There's something behind that. If you say to your brother, to your associate, you're worthless, you're no good to society, we'd be better off without you. If you say Reka to them, there's serious consequence for that. There's something that's building up. And if you allow that to continue, you know, today we might work on not only behavior, but we work on attitudes with our children, don't we? And we might say to another adult or to the other parent, to our spouse, we might say, well, this one is really developing an attitude. And we know that an attitude will culminate in an action. So Jesus was addressing those things that led up to the action that brought unconformity, if that's a proper word there, to the law. He said, you've heard it said, thou shalt not kill. But I'm telling you, you need to think about how you're getting off track if you start saying or thinking angry thoughts, saying that that person is worthless or that they're a fool, and there's more to that probably than we're reading here. He says if you carry in a grudge and you're trying to worship God, I wonder how many people under the old law carried a grudge and brought sacrifices to pay for their sins in the past. I wonder how many of them brought a grudge with them too. And where did the law address grudges? Jesus said, if you're carrying a grudge, if there's something going on between you and your brother, go fix that first. This is something that'll put you in a place where you might be tempted to do something that would be against the law. All right? So he says, agree with thine adversary quickly. He didn't say compromise the truth. But agree with him. Try to be as accommodating as you possibly can. Then we'll go on to the 27th verse. He says, ye have heard that it's been said of them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. That's part of the old law, isn't it? That's part of the Ten Commandments. And, you know, both of these have in the later on, besides in Exodus 20, the law in that's written out in Deuteronomy, there is so much elaboration on these two laws in particular of all the different scenarios of how you're not supposed to commit adultery. You can't. I'm reminded of some of those little children's books that's trying to teach them a few little words, and you can't do it here, and you can't do it there, and just one another just introduce basically the same sentence and introduce a new word, just one word. You know, you can't eat it in a box. You can't eat it with a fox. You know what I'm saying? All right. So that's kind of the way the old law was. You don't commit adultery with this one. You don't commit adultery with that one. You don't commit adultery here, and you don't commit adultery there. And it's just on and on and on. And pretty soon you think, man, those that would try to find a way that they could legally do that, they had to be pretty imaginative. But Jesus says, you've heard that they said of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you what? Don't look down that path. And it's more today, it's more the devil is desirous that we would fail along these lines. And he's running up and down that fence looking for a way that he can breach the barrier and introduce this, whether it's with hatred, whether it's thinking less of our brother because of whatever, because of their station in life, because of their race or ethnic background or whatever. The devil is wanting to put some kind of, he has a desire to destroy us. And he has a desire on this line too. And Jesus said, if you begin to look on something and you're feeling those appetites being accelerated, I said, you've already done wrong. You've already done it in your heart. So, Lord, help us as we address this to realize that Jesus came not to just rub it off and say, well, we're not holding that position anymore. You know, there's people that want to say, well, there's no use trying to hold this standard or that standard. We'll never get that one back. Well, it's not that we don't get anything. It's every one of us are held accountable before God. You're going to be held accountable on this. Jesus is not coming to replace the law. He's not got something different. He come to fulfill it. And how can he fulfill it? Because he wants us to be a new creature. He wants us to be changed. All things would be new. And he wants our desires and our appetites to be different. He wants us to recognize when I begin thinking thoughts that lead me away from the Lord, it's time to curb that thing. It's time to recognize that's the enemy that wants to hurt me. It's not just a harmless thought. It's not just a harmless idea. That's the devil behind that. Okay? He says, I believe this is talking about how serious it is that we should address this part of not contemplating the things the devil's suggestion. He goes on and says, if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. We're going to have to be willing to make the consecrations that it takes to make to not violate the 28th verse. What are we willing to do? You know, if we legislated it and said, well, my pastor won't let me have whatever, because he knows that I might think a wrong thought if I had that. No, I'm telling you, you're going to have to do it yourself. You're going to have the courage. It says, if thy right eye offend thee, if thy hand offends thee, you're going to have to do some trimming. You're going to have to do some plucking, if you will. You're going to have to do some things. Don't go those places. Don't put yourself in those places. Lord, help us all. If you're thinking ugly thoughts about your associates, about those that you go to service with, if all you can see when their name comes to your mind is some kind of negative behavior, you probably better, you're going to have to make some changes there, because that's not what Jesus wants you. That's not fulfilling the law. He wants to make a change in your heart. There's something that needs to be different. So Jesus didn't come to scrub it out. He goes on to say in the 31st verse, if it hath been said, it hath been said, whosoever shall put his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. And that wasn't even in the Ten Commandments. That was something that Moses granted out of the hardness of their heart. And he says here, but I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, committeth adultery. So he says this is going beyond some kind of legislative matter. This is a real heart issue here, and you have a responsibility. We have a responsibility one for another. You remember some of our thoughts about being a brother's keeper? I believe we have a responsibility here. Don't set one another up for failure. By this illustration here was don't divorce your wife because you're causing them. Did they really cause them? Did they really make them? Didn't they still have a choice? Yeah, you can say they did, but you sure put them in the place where that looked like the only way out for them, if you put them out. Lord, help us today to think about what does our actions cause other people to have to do to compensate for it. You know, there are always those that we seem to have an easier time at building a relationship with, and others it's more difficult. That's just part of human nature. Some of us, we kind of click. Maybe we're the same age, or maybe we got some common ground, and maybe both of us like animals, or both of us don't like animals. You know, whatever it might, we got some common ground, so we kind of come together, and it's like, it's pretty easy to be friends with this one, or pretty easy to be friends with that one. But then there's those that they like animals, and I don't like animals. How do you compensate for that? You know, we can cause, what is our, how we, I'll just go ahead with that little illustration there. You know, my wife and I grew up in homes that, please don't take this as judgmental, all right? We both grew up in homes that allowed the children's pets to come in the house. My brother and I had a cat or two that would come in, and they didn't live there all the time, but they spent a lot of time in the house. And my wife came from a house that let the dog come in. It didn't matter how big it was, the dog could come in the house. We got married, and we both decided that if our children has pets, they belong outside. They don't come in the house. Well, we could go down this path, and, you know, I could know that somebody here has a pet that they allow in the house, and you know what? I need to be careful about voicing my strong opinions about not letting the pet in the house. I just do. You know, it's their place. They can do however they want to have a pot-bellied pig in the house. It's okay. I'm not living there. But I need to be careful about what I vocalize. You know, if in their presence, if I'm saying I just cannot understand anybody that would let a dog in the house, and that just gives me the creeps or whatever you want to say. What do? You're just building up walls. That's all that's happening. You're creating conflict, and I'm setting us up for confrontation. And he says here, don't put your wife away, because you're going to take some responsibility for that. But I'm applying this even to other things too. You want to build relationships with other people? Then be careful about what you criticize, you know. Just be careful about talking about how much you like sardines when you're around me, because I don't like them. You know, if you do, that's okay. Just don't ask me to eat them, okay? But anyway, I just want us to think here. The law, Jesus didn't come to give us something different to follow. He came to put something in our hearts. This is what he was preaching about and teaching about in the Sermon on the Mount. He says again, ye have heard, 33rd verse, again ye have heard, there's been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it's God's throne, nor by the earth, for it's his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. Here again, we've got something that had become customary for the Jews at that time, and the descendants of the Israelites, that they used this. They were swearing by the temple and swearing by this and swearing by that and trying to make whatever they said sound more impactful. Jesus said, that's not the way you do it. You're to live to where if you tell somebody, nope, that's not the way it was when I left it. If it was damaged, I would have told you so. I would have called you, as we heard earlier this evening. We don't have to swear about that. We can live in such a manner that people can accept it because we're consistent. And it's because it's coming out of our character. It's Jesus wants... Do you get that point? Jesus wants to change who we are. He wants to make, he don't change our personality so much, but he wants to take that old man and make us a new man. Different. All things become new. Where we would not be predisposed to do the things that would bring us in conflict with the law. Well, maybe we'll stop there for this evening. But I want you to get the thought of how that Jesus came. We could go, you know, he talked about two of the laws in particular, thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not commit adultery. And I'd like to, maybe next Sunday evening we'll spend a little more time with this, but I'd like for us to pursue something that gets brought up quite frequently about that none of the laws should be neglected. And they start talking about when we ought to worship. And it ought to be on, our services ought to be on Saturday, because that's the last day of the week. And I'm not really prepared this evening to give you all of the thoughts there, but I want you to think about what we've talked about here tonight in relationship to thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not commit adultery. And let's see how close, next time we talk about these things, let's see how close what your inspiration is and my inspiration. What do you think Jesus, how was he teach that? How would he have us hold that? Because the law told them that they ought to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. That's what he said. So you just think about that this coming week and ask the Lord to give you some inspiration. How? That's as much of the law as thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not commit adultery. He said real plain that remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. So I want us to talk about that next Sunday night, maybe Lord willing. I desire your prayers. I want the law not to be fulfilled and that I don't deviate from it. I don't want that either, but I want the law fulfilled to where there would be no question if something come up and I had to take a position that somebody had to take my word. I want it to be believable. I want them to recognize that there's a character that supports whatever I say. Lord, help us here this evening. You pray for me, and let's think about what Jesus was saying here when he said, I came to not to destroy the law, but to fulfill the law.